Retiring material. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 180.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, 'cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublitz Jr. here with you on Tuesday, December 8th, 2020. We're almost done with 2020, almost into 2021. Hopefully it'll be a brighter, better year for everybody, because this last year has been quite the year for everybody. A lot of ups. Well, no, that's not right. Not a lot of ups. A lot of downs, some ups. That's really how it's been. But anyway, I hope you guys are doing well this week. I hope you guys had a great week. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode with Lou Deck. Wasn't that a great history lesson on the world-famous comedy store? A lot of great comics were name-dropped, and he had a lot of great stories about those. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Today on the show, I have another great comedian. My guest today is Pete Jr. He's a comedian from Salt Lake City, Utah, who I met when I met doing Snow Jam Comedy Festival. He came out and did our festival, and we got to know each other there, and we've kept in contact. And then I went out to Utah to film my Dry Bar Comedy special, and he ended up getting to film his Dry Bar Comedy special the same night. Wow, it was such a coincidence. We hung out and did some stuff out in Salt Lake while I was out there, so it was cool. We did not record this episode in Salt Lake City. We recorded it afterwards. And I do want to warn everybody with this episode, there was some, because we recorded remotely, we did have some technical issues, so I had to do some editing on it. So if there's some weird transitions, that's why. There was just some, you know, lag that he kept cutting in and out, and it just did not make sense to keep it in. It just sounded bad, so I cut it all out. So we tried to do a take two, but And it sounds pretty good, but like I said, if you notice a weird transition, that's why. We had to do a little bit of editing. It happens. That's the world we live in this pandemic. Yes, COVID and everything going on with that. And I will have to say, I'll give you guys another warning about this episode. We did talk a lot about the state of comedy and the pandemic and things like that. But I do think it is important that we take this virus serious and this pandemic serious. I mean, I realize life has got to go on. We all have bills to pay. We got to make money. But we got to be responsible about it. You know, you got to try to wear the mask and do the social distancing. Wash your hands. Use the sanitizer. This is some serious stuff. It really is. Like, I know people that have got it. In fact, right now, one of our friends of the show, Darren Bulow, is in the hospital recovering from COVID. He's been battling for a while, and fortunately, every day he's showing improvement and he's getting better. And I've been reading the updates that his wife has been sharing on his Facebook profile. But it's some serious stuff, so you know, keep that in mind. You know, the people don't want to wear masks, but just do it for other people. It ain't going to hurt. It doesn't hurt to wear a mask. And I'm not trying to be preachy, but, you know, it really hits home when somebody you know has it and you see their struggle with it. You know, I mean, he was in intensive care for quite a while and still has to use feeding tubes. And it's a serious thing. That's all I'm saying. So along with that, along with taking this virus serious, I would say send some positive energy to Darren. He's you know, a fan of the show, big supporter. He's a comedian himself, big supporter of other comics and other comedy. And he could use a little positive energy. So send some positive energy his way. He'd appreciate it, and I'd appreciate it. Because, you know, we're a team. We're all a team. We're a community, and we gotta look out for our community. That's what it boils down to. All right, before we get into this conversation with Pete, let's handle some business. We are coming to the end of 2020, and I decided, you know what would be fun is if we did a best of. That's right, a best of. And I want the listeners opinions. So I have put a survey out on the website. If you go to artofbombingpod.com and click on the best of tab, you will see a form that I would like you to fill out. And what we're doing, and this is the best part about filling this form out, it'll take you like 3 or 4 minutes to do, maybe 5, depending on how much thinking you have to do. But everybody that fills out the form is going to be registered for a drawing to win a prize. That's right, to win some Art of Bombing swag. And all you have to do is fill out the form. But what the best of is I want to know what your favorite episodes have been through all the seasons. Last week, Ludek, that was season 5. That was the first episode of season 5. That's right, we're on 5 seasons. The podcast has been going for almost 4 years now, and I've never done anything like this, and I thought it would be cool to close out 2020 with the best of. So, like I said, there's 4 I'm doing them by each season. I want to know what season, like what episode from each season was your favorite. And then I'll probably do a little episode about that, the winners, you know, at least talk about who your favorite episodes are from each of the 4 previous seasons. Cause I think that would be pretty cool. And while you're there, I have some other questions. You know, I'm looking for a little bit of feedback about what you like and what you don't like about the podcast. Another thing that I've did here over the last couple of days is I'm trying to change the questions. That's another thing that's going to be on that form. If you have a suggestion for a question for the pick a number segment of the show, you can put that there. And it'd be great. It would just be great to get your guys' feedback on some of that stuff. And again, that is at artofbombingpod.com, and then click on the best of tab and the form's right there. It'll be good. Right there. Another thing I did is if you listen to Spotify, you have playlists if you're one of those people that stream your music, we have created the Art of Bombing Get Pumped playlist. And what that is I went and did some polling on Facebook with some of my comedian friends on songs they listen to get pumped up for shows. And I got a bunch of great responses, and so I put it into a playlist. So, you know, I'm going to be doing, I'm going to be asking that question in future episodes of the podcast to get, to see what comics listen to get pumped up. And I'll be continually adding to that playlist, but it is there if you want to go check that out on Spotify. Of course, you know, you can go to the website for, you know, merch and blogs and all that stuff. Sign up for the newsletter. That's a monthly newsletter. Don't worry. Don't spam anybody. Just do it monthly. It comes out on the last day of the month, typically, and that's just a sneak peek of what's to come, review of what happened over the month, things like that, and then some other little fun things that are only, you know, exclusive to the newsletter. So check that out if you haven't done so already. Now, last thing, I do have a virtual show coming up on December 18th and 19th. It's the Holly Jolly Jamboree. I've got comics from all over the country that are going to be on that show, and it's going to be a good time. And the tickets are pay what you want. It's donation-based, and all the money that we make is going to go to the comics that are performing because, they need money too. The holidays are coming up, so come watch a great show. It's on virtual. You don't even have to leave your house. We're doing it on Zoom. It's going to be fun. Great lineups on both nights. Both nights are different lineups. The only thing that's the same on both nights is me. I'll be on both of them. So that's what I got coming up. I know this has been a longer intro than I normally do, but I had a lot of things to talk about. Did a lot of the rebranding, and there's a lot of great things coming up with the podcast. So, again, artofbombingpod.com for everything. Subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating, maybe a nice review, and share the podcast with somebody. That's the best way you can help us. Help us with that word-of-mouth marketing. We would appreciate it. Now, finally, before we get into this conversation with Pete Jr., I should just mention the episode was recorded late October, early November, so it was recorded a while ago, so some of the stuff might seem a little outdated already. I don't know, maybe it doesn't, but just wanted to give you guys that warning because I like you to know what's going on with the Art of Bombing. So let's do it. Here's my conversation with my pal, Pete Jr. Enjoy!
And now, it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
It's a tough scene, man. Like, Especially first dates. I don't know what it is about a first date. Like, we're so nervous. We say more than we need to. If you ever notice you're on a first date, you have to go to the bathroom. You're like, I have to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. Why do we say that? Is that something that really needs to be established? Are we that insecure? If you're on a first date, you might not be right back. If you're on a first date, you're like, damn it. I gotta run to the bathroom, man. I'm gonna be honest. Could go either way.
How are you tonight?
I'm good, man. How are you doing? You made the long drive back?
I did make the long drive back. I drove like an animal. Coming back. I did. I left the hotel Sunday morning and I drove all the way to Mitchell, South Dakota, which was about a 15-ish hour drive, right in that ballpark, maybe a little less, 13, something like that. I mean, with stops and everything. I left at like 8 in the morning, I think, and I got there at 11, so... Wow. So, yeah. So it was like 15 hours in my car. Yeah.
It's not messing around, man. You said when you got back, you were going to, you haven't been doing comedy and you were going to kind of, you're coming out to do this and you're going to kind of go back and take it easy for a little while. Have we still maintained that position or have you snuck on stage a couple times?
No, I have hardly left my house.
Oh, nice.
I went to an open mic Friday. An open mic that I enjoyed prior to the shutdown started back up, and I did go do that. The lady and I went and had supper at the venue, and then we stayed and I did the open mic, but until then, I hadn't left the house since I got home Monday. I got home Monday, and I didn't leave the house until Friday night. Like, I didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So, and even still, I haven't really did a whole lot. Like, this week, I haven't really did anything either.
Sure. What's the stand-up situation where you are? How early did that open back up?
I feel like, around June is when a lot of stuff started opening up here again.
Gotcha.
Because that's when bars and restaurants were able to open back up for like indoor seating and patio seating and that kind of stuff. I mean, they still have limited capacities and they had to do like social distance seating and things like that. So,
yeah,
but yeah, so it was fairly early, mid June, I think, something like that. Things started opening back up. So
what amount of capacity do they allow?
I honestly don't know what the capacity is, it's been reduced to, if it's half or a quarter or what. I think it's half capacity, but I'm not 100% sure. I haven't really been keeping up on that. But even though things started opening up, I feel like comedy took a little while longer before it, you know, started.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Before it started picking back up, you know, Acme Comedy Club, which is one of the main clubs here, I think they were one of the first clubs to get back in action. And I want to say they were probably doing stuff in June, July.
Yeah. I was going to say 50% is good. 50%, you could still, you know, get a pretty good reaction. 25% is a little bit of a heavier lift.
Yeah. You know? And I could be absolutely wrong on the numbers. I honestly don't know. Yeah. I just know that it is reduced and, but I did, before I came out to Salt Lake City, I was at the House of Comedy and, you know, their reduced capacity was 125 people.
Yeah, man.
So that's still a pretty good crowd for a reduced capacity, you know.
It's probably close to that because the downtown club, like we've had, you know, Mark Norman come through, Tim Dillon, Tony Hinchcliffe, and I think they got crowds of like a good 150, but the club normally seats about 350, I think, at max. So
yeah, so that's just under 50% capacity.
Mm-hmm.
that they're limiting too.
But it felt good. I don't, man, it's going to feel so weird when people are back shoulder to shoulder again. Cause like when you get a good,
do you think that's going to happen though? I mean, do you honestly, you think that people we're going to get back to where people are going to want to sit shoulder to shoulder? Cause I wonder about that, because I don't, not just like the venue seating that way. I wonder if people are going to want to go out and sit that close to people if they don't know them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So when I like, because I kind of get, I'll kind of go down the rabbit hole with like what different states are doing. Mm-hmm. And the ones where they say that they've like, they allowed people to like pack the place, it's shoulder to shoulder. And that's in the middle of all this. You know what I mean? Sometimes I wonder if they just said like, all right, whatever you guys want to do. I think in pretty short order, people would, I mean, not everybody, but I think there'd be enough people that they would, they'd pack it up pretty, pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some people that'll still be kind of timid maybe for like a year, even with the vaccine, but I think it'll, I think full capacity will come back. It's the biggest thing. I think it's going to be a clubs all make it.
Yeah. Well, that's the biggest thing we got to worry about, because there's a lot of clubs that aren't making it right now. And so that means the ones that are open, you got to support them. Please support.
that's the thing, man. I'm a big believer in that, because it's like, you know, from my, if when everything I see, like when they say like, you know, like realistically when the vaccine is going to come out, for the majority of us, it sounds like mid 2021, maybe, you know, second quarter of 2021. I just can't imagine comedy clubs could hang on for that long if people didn't come out and support those. And
like, absolutely.
And I understand it's a risk, and you know, I don't want to say I take that lightly, but I also think it's important that we have a society and a culture to come back to. And I feel like it is important to support.
It really is. And it's important. I feel like entertainment is important in general, just for people. People want to forget about what's going on. They want that distraction. And that's really what comedy is it's a distraction from their everyday life, you know? And I think now more than ever, people are looking for that distraction. But, you know, as long as you're smart about it, because, you know, I see a lot of people, you know, and even, you know, specifically in comedy, I see comics shaming other comics for going and doing gigs. And then, you know, some comics have got COVID out on the road, and mm-hmm. you know, it is definitely a risk, but everything's a risk. You got to look at it that way. I mean, without COVID, you could still go out on the road and get in a car accident, or, you know, whatever it might be. It's still a risk, you know, but I think if, you know, you're smart about it, you know, and you make sure that the shows are practicing social distancing, requiring masks, things like that, things that will help, you know, they're not ultimately going to prevent COVID, but they'll help mm-hmm. reduce it. That definitely helps, because at the end of the day, you know, a lot of comics that do this full time, they can't get unemployment. You know, the ones that don't have like regular day gigs, they have to work. So when you're like, oh, you shouldn't work, well, are you going to pay their bills? Because our government's not really helping. So what are they supposed to do? You know, you have to have an income, especially comics that have families, you know?
Yeah, and I don't think that, you know, I don't think they should just go, you know, willy-nilly, full tilt, pack the place right now. But, I mean, it's like you said, if it's reduced capacity, everybody's spread out, they're wearing masks, you know. Within that, yeah, there's still going to be some risk, but it's, I mean, we just did, you know, the comedy specials together, and I got to tell you, man, seeing people's reaction coming out, the way it feels, you know, just I feel like people have always used humor to get through difficult times, you know what I mean? And
absolutely,
even in the craziest of times, people need to be able to just hit pause for a second and just laugh. And so I really feel like you know you be as responsible as you can, you know, you follow the rules, and but to give somebody a hard time for going out to enjoy a comedy show or somebody going out and performing, I just don't think that's fair. I don't think it's fair. I think, you know, it's going to be around at least for a while longer, at least a good 6 more months. Mm-hmm. But a lot of experts say, you know, it could be longer. We've got to function to some capacity with it. And I don't think keeping comedy shut down for a year and a half is the way to go.
That's
fundamentally disagree with that.
Yeah. Well, keeping anything shut down for that long. I mean, even if you shutting down restaurants and small businesses and things like that, a lot of businesses won't survive. Just outside of entertainment alone. I mean, that's just the reality of it. So, you know, you really do, you know, you have to find a way of moving forward simultaneously with what's going on. You know what I mean? Like, you're right. You can't just completely shut down for the next 2 years. That doesn't make sense. You know, so you have to move forward, but you have to do it cautiously because it's still a risk and it's still a danger. Mm-hmm. But that's the important thing, is learning to live with it until we figure out a solution to the problem.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this, I'm always interested at kind of where society's at with the whole thing. Cause you kind of see the headlines, you know, and then people will get into like these Facebook battles and all this nonsense. And it almost seems like people are more like reluctant to go out than they really are. And, like me and a friend, local comic, you met him, Wes, you met Wes mm-hmm. when you were here. We'll go out and we'll grab lunch. We go to the Cheesecake Factory. And, I was curious. I was like, man, I wonder if this place is going to be empty, man. You know what I mean? There's just going to be a few people sitting who are willing to go out. And for the most part, it's going to be pretty, quite a downer. But dude, I was surprised. Like, every seat was full and there was like a wait for like 30 minutes to get a seat. And I was like, mm-hmm. well, damn. And then when I've done comedy shows, we've had times where like, cause Utah, I don't know if you heard what's going on in Utah, but it's just been exploding. Mm-hmm. And
and I think Utah didn't really have mask mandates, did they, prior to them spiking? Or
so in Salt Lake County they do, in Summit County, which is where Park City is, they do. In Utah County, that's out there with like BYU, that's Utah County. They were seeing a pretty big spike in Utah County, but they also saw some in Salt Lake too. So when I look at the numbers, Utah County was kind of pulling ahead, but we were still pretty close. But Salt Lake County is obviously going to be the most populated.
Yeah.
But man, I'm telling you though, like when I see the headlines, I think the headlines are going to drive people's behavior. And I think that's how it was early on, because whatever the headlines said, the reaction of society was clear. But now you see the headlines, they're like, it's, you know, cases are broke another record today. Highest ever been. And so I expect when I go out, I'm not going to see anybody out, but like, I'm shocked at how many people will come out because they want to come see comedy or they want to go out to eat dinner or whatever. I mean, I think there's almost like a unspoken sentiment amongst society versus what like we see on the news. I think a lot of society.
Yeah.
A lot of society is willing to go out more so than you would think by reading headlines. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And some would argue that's the reason that we're still in the situation that we're on, that we can't get a handle on it, because people refuse to stay home and they refuse to wear masks and they refuse to wash their hands or whatever it may be, because we have this sense of self-entitlement in America. And that's why we can't get a wrap on this, you know. I mean, because other countries have reduced it significantly, you know, by taking these measures, you know. So, I mean, like I said, I think it's one of the things. I mean, it's obviously here, it's not going anywhere, and life does go on. But it's like you said, you have to learn to live with it. Right now, you just have to, you know, still go out, but be careful. And it's like it's a situation where everybody needs to do their part, you know, where businesses need to even though it's still a hit on their books, but it's going to be more of a hit if everything gets completely shut down, you know, by reducing their capacity and, you know, people wearing masks and using sanitizer and doing everything you can to help reduce it. Because at the end of the day, none of that stuff prevents it. You know what I mean? Like, nothing can prevent it. It's a matter of reducing it and reducing the spread.
Yeah, I wonder where the equilibrium is. You know what I mean? Like, because like they're always saying, they're always like, well, Europe did it so much better. And like, I just go out of curiosity. I check out France, Spain.
Well, they're, I know they're, New Zealand did pretty good with it.
New Zealand, but like they were saying, Germany did a great job with it. And I went and looked recently, and it is just exploding. When you look at like the daily, it's like a ski ramp, just boom.
So it's almost like, yeah, Germany's been spiking here lately.
They've been UK, France, Spain, Germany, I looked at all their dailies and all of them are exploding. And I'm like,
and you're going to see that. I mean, this is cold and flu season that we're getting into now. So I'm sure you're going to see this spike tremendously all over the world again. And, you know, but which sucks because the rest of the world, they kind of got a grasp of how to, you know, what to do. And even though they're spiking, they know that, you know, they know the steps to take to kind of get it to lower those numbers. Where in the U.S., we've got so many different – it'd be one thing if we had, like, a standard across the board, you know, like a federal standard. But we're state to state. And because of that, like, we can't get a grasp on anything that works. You know, like, one state will have mask mandates and order restaurants to the limited capacities and this and that. And then the next state over – I don't care about nothing. I mean, that's what I saw too, like driving out to Utah. In Minnesota, they've been taking this pretty serious since it started, and South Dakota doesn't care about it at all. I mean, there's people in South Dakota, obviously, that are, you know, trying, and very few people wear masks. Like, give you an example, coming home, I went to breakfast before I left Mitchell to come back to the cities, and I stopped at Perkins, and it's hunting season in South Dakota. I think it's like out of state it opened up, and the place was packed. There was no social distancing with tables. There was no, you know, hardly very few people were wearing masks that came in as customers. A couple of the staff members were wearing masks, but otherwise it was like, nobody cares there. You know what I mean? It's like, I was like, I need to eat and get the hell out of here as fast as I can. That's how I felt, you know, because I've been, and I'm maybe a little too paranoid about it. And I have a right to be. I'm diabetic, you know, like, I mean, I'm pretty sure I already caught COVID before we knew it was COVID, but so I might have, you know, antibodies and stuff, but either way, I have to be cautious about it. And I'm a little paranoid. Like, that's part of the reason I don't go out as much. You know, there's, you know, I have friends that are like, I don't care, I'm going to go do whatever. That's like, fine, I'm going to stay in the safety of my home. Not because, you know, not just because I'm afraid that I'll get the virus. I mean, that is a possibility. I could go outside and get hit by a bus. That's a possibility, too. But also, I actually enjoy being at home. You know, I got everything I need here. So it's not that bad. I have my wonderful fiance here and our dogs, and I've got my video games and comic books, and I can write, and everything I need is right here. You know, so I don't have the need to go out all the time.
No, I was going to say, we went to Lava Hot Springs, which is incredible, by the way. If nobody's ever been to Lava Hot Springs, it's in Idaho. And from Salt Lake, it's just like 2 hours. And so we went for my wife's birthday. And holy shit, man. It's almost like everybody like is just like pretending like there's no pandemic.
Dude,
it was every restaurant was packed.
I mean, if we looking around, that's funny.
We're like, okay, Dude, masks, like, that, nobody gave a shit. It was crazy, dude. And it's a little it's town. It's kind of nestled in the mountains. It's got a lot of charm. But, dude, I don't know if that's – I don't want to say that's Idaho overall. And, and again, I love lava. I absolutely love that place. But, dude, it was cracking us up because they straight up didn't give a shit. It's like it was like a vacation where we all pretended like, you know, hey, COVID's not here, la, 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 la.
You know, well, if you pretend it doesn't exist, then maybe it doesn't exist, right? it's a crazy time. I mean, I think things will bounce back eventually, but like I said, we all have to do our part. We have to do it, you know, be smart about it, you know, because you can't, like you said, you can't just quit everything. You have to move forward. That's life does not stop. There's plenty of other things out in the world that are dangerous that can get you, you know, so you can't live in total fear, but you can definitely do your part to help reduce, you know, everything. But I also think, you know, like I said, like going through some of these states where they don't care. I mean, I just saw a thing in South Dakota, and I talk about South Dakota a lot because that's where I'm originally from. So even though I don't live there anymore, I still pay attention to the issues because it drives me nuts to see it in the way it is and how people are there. And so maybe it would be better for my mental health if I didn't pay attention or care, but I do either way. But right now, medical marijuana and recreational marijuana are going to be on their ballot for voting this year. Well, the thing is, though, so the governor just did an interview where she basically they basically asked her how she can say that whether or not to wear a mask is a violation of one's personal freedoms, because she's against cannabis. She's against the legalization of cannabis, hemp, marijuana, the whole works. She wants nothing to do with it. And of course she is a big, got her head up Trump's butt person. She's been campaigning for him and whatever. So she's one of them nut jobs, but either way, she's totally against marijuana at all capacities in the state of South Dakota. And they were asking her in this interview, basically, how she can justify masks being, you know, a freedom, a violation of free, personal freedom, but choosing whether or not one wants to smoke marijuana or not is not. You know, and she was basically like, well, one's a drug and it can be harmful. And it's like, you dummy. You don't realize how dumb you are when you say that, because guess what? COVID kills people. Yeah. You know, marijuana, very low numbers of people die from marijuana. You know what I mean? Like, COVID is probably far more dangerous than a little cannabis is. And, you know,
that always blows my mind. Because usually the people that are always like the most like freedom, 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 are against legalizing marijuana. Like, it's because I've never understood that.
Yeah, no, it's because it doesn't fit their agenda. You know, that's what it's all about. It's all about some sort of an agenda and it doesn't fit. Because it's just like the same thing goes with, you have all these people, you know, arguing pro-life, but then they refuse to wear a mask. You know, it's like, how are you pro-life if you don't want to wear a mask that could potentially save somebody's life? You know, like you're just a hypocrite lost in your own words. You don't know what you're saying. That's how ignorant you become. You don't even make sense. I mean, those people don't make sense.
Yeah, man. No, the thing to me, like, if ever you were to look at like an impingement upon somebody's freedom, is if like to tell somebody they have to keep their business closed for like 8 months, I think there comes a point where it's like, If you're going to tell somebody you cannot open your business, I just think it should be, okay, then you have to pay their rent or you have to pay their lease.
No, absolutely. Like, I totally agree with that.
It's so crazy to me that, like, because there's a lot of places where it's like, you know, they've been forced to close down, but the mortgage companies are still coming to collect, or, you know, whoever's leasing it out.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, if we're pulling that lever for like a month or even 2 months, okay. But
there definitely has to be assistance.
If you're going to tell someone you can't open, I just can't wrap my head around being like, no, you have to stay open. It's like, did I do anything wrong? No, 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 but there's some shit going on. We need you to close. And it's going to be 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
The next question would be like, well, what, okay, well, how are we going to keep me alive here? And to be like, well, here's what we're going to do. That here's what we're going to do is like not there. That's the craziest shit to me about
it. Is.
It
is. I mean,
like,
and that's the reason other countries.
Oh, no, no. We've already got that taken care of. Here's what's happening.
I know. That's why other countries have handled this better, because when they did that, they were like, hey, this is what we're going to do. They had a plan to help people survive, you know, financially with their businesses and things closed. And here we're just like, that's the free capitalist world. We're like, we're the government. We're going to shut you down because of this virus, and we're not going to help you. And when you close down and go bankrupt, well, we're going to come get your house. So screw you. Ha ha ha. You know, that's one of the worst things about, I mean, the free market is great in many aspects and in a lot of ways, you know, the idea of you can be whatever you want and, you know, you make your own success and things like that. But in other ways, you know, it's not good. And especially when you have a situation like this, it's definitely not good when there's a global pandemic.
Yeah. You know what you said, though, that like totally resonates with me, man. Like, I think I was explaining this to my wife a couple of months ago, like comedians in a lot of ways, like I think maybe the perception of a comedian is like these party boys and party girls, and they're out and they're crazy and all this. A lot of ways we're kind of nerds, man. You know what I mean?
Oh, we're like, absolutely nerds.
Outside of comedy, dude, like I am totally happy being at home and not having to go to some social function that's going to be my nightmare. It's really weird because, like, I love performing. I love that feeling of when a joke just boom and it just connects. It's awesome. It's just
that
awesome.
That is the pro of COVID, because talk about getting a person out of social obligations.
Oh my
gosh. Oh my God. That was probably one of the best parts about it. Being able to be like, I'm sorry, I can't come to your event. Yes. COVID.
I care about you too much to come to your event.
I don't have to be an asshole and just say no. There's a good reason now.
But no, man, it's like, that's the thing. Like staying home, like, dude, that's kind of like just a quiet night. Like you get the kids down, freaking put on a movie. Like, dude, that I love that kind of shit. But I'll tell you this, like, and I knew I love comedy. I don't want to say I didn't know how much I love comedy. I knew how much I loved it. I don't think I realized how hard it would hit me when it was taken away. Cause when we had our lockdown, just having those few months where I just couldn't do it at all. I mean, I don't mean to sound obnoxious, but like there's people who dabble with comedy, and there's people who really immerse themselves in it that I consider comedians. You know what I mean? Like the person who kind of they'll drop in from time to time, but you get the people who are like, it's just in their blood, man. And like,
oh, absolutely.
I mean, like once a week, I always go down on Wednesdays, you know, see all those familiar faces, talk shit, crack jokes, talk about that thing that you're working on, go up and test it. If it bombs, your buddies are laughing in the back of the room because they think it's hilarious. But if it ends, you know what I mean? You get that killer feel.
Now to get into what this podcast is about, you know, we talked about COVID quite a bit and how it's affected comedy. But now let's talk about the art of bombing. Obviously, we just did our dry bar specials together a couple weeks ago, and the shows were great. And you did not bomb indeed that night. No, you did very well. But that's not what this show is about. This show is about bombing. So I'd like you to go ahead and share your story when you felt like you had a really bad show or you bombed really hard.
Yeah. So the time that I would reference would be my third time doing stand up. And the first show I did was actually went semi decent. And so did the second. So I don't know, man. I had like a false sense of confidence. Like I actually thought I could avoid bombing, like
that was a mistake.
I was like, I think I got this figured out, this comedy thing, man. And my mom, when I was heading out, she was like, good luck. And I was like, it has nothing to do with it. Like this cocky bullshit.
How old were you when you did your third? How old were you when you started?
In my early 20s.
Oh, okay. The reason I asked is because you mentioned mom. So I was like, you were still at home. So
early 20s, was college kid. And
okay.
And I was kind of in and out, like in and out of comedy for a long time. But I went down there, man. And dude, I ate shit so hard, like so hard that the host came up afterwards to check on me. And like, and you got to think, when you're seeing a bunch of new comics get up, you're going to see a lot of people eating shit, right?
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
For him to come up to me to check on me, because that stood out to him, like, oh, this guy's not okay. He's
yep.
freaking out inside. And he came, I put his hand on my shoulder. And he's like, hey man, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm cool. And I was not cool in the slightest, man. it was so traumatizing that I would drive out to the comedy club, which would take me 30 minutes to get there back where I was living at the time. I'd be in the parking lot and be like, all right, get out of the car, you freaking wuss. And then I was like, I can't do it. And I just turn around and I drive home. And this went on for months.
Oh,
it went
wow.
on for 6 months. And it's funny because I was watching an interview with Anthony Jeselnik, who to me, that guy's like one of the greatest. And he was saying he had like a similar experience. You know, I wonder how many people had like an early traumatic bomb that mm-hmm. took them out for a bit, because it took me 6 months. And what finally got me back in was, and I have to remember this to this day, it's when I get away from this is when I start doing worse, is that bombing's a part of the deal.
Yep.
And if your number one fear is that you're not going to be funny, you're already toast. Because when you go up to try new material, when I'm the most loose, when I'm the most like, you know what, who gives a shit? I wrote this thing, let's try it. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. No big deal. When I'm the most at that mindset is when I do the best. When I'm so worried about a new bit working or not is when I tend to make a self-fulfilling prophecy that it's going to eat shit. And the thing that was really cool with the fact that I ate shit so hard to start and then like slowly built up a routine and eventually headlining set is when I finally stepped up and headlined, which just happened about a year ago now, the guy who was the host on that show that came to check on me if I was okay, he hosted my show when I headlined on the
Oh, wow. Show,
which
Talk
is,
about
it was really cool.
Full circle.
Shout out to Rodney Norman, who, by the way, he tremendous comic. He's been in the Boston Comedy Festival, and just I still look up to him to this day. On
did you start in Salt Lake City? Then is that where you always lived? Okay,
started in Salt Lake, moved to California, did that for a few years, and when I moved out of California, it's because I was like, you know, oh, you got a tour as a comic, you got a tour. So I was taking every bullshit one-nighter out there, and that was a learning experience too. I mean, there's some value in it because you're doing like consistently doing 30-minute sets or whatever. You can also waste a lot of time doing that too, which
absolutely.
I've learned that now. So
where in California did you live?
Orange County.
You were in Orange County. Ooh, so you were pretty close to where I used to live, which was down in San Diego.
Yeah,
neighbors. When were you out in California, just out of curiosity?
I was out there in my mid-20s.
So, like, what years?
So, let's see. It would be about 2005, 2006.
Oh, way before me.
Yeah. But like I said, I would take these hiatuses, man. Like I mm-hmm. would be like out of comedy for 3 years, and then I'd come back. And now I'm at a point where there's no more hiatuses. There's no more of this bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's a hobby and blah blah blah. I think I kept saying that, and I'm like, man, why am I being such chicken shit? You know, like if I can make it happen, then why not do that? You know, like if it doesn't, that's fine. I love comedy so much. I'll never stop doing it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also, I think that's something that's different about comedy than other art forms. Like in a lot of ways, if music, if it doesn't happen for you at a young age, that you're done. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah. You know, oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. It definitely gets harder the older you get, and that is one thing nice with comedy. Granted, it can still be a young person's game. You can still make it at an older age. I mean, it happens all the time. A lot of breakout comedians. I mean, we call them breakout comedians because to the public it seems like they just broke out, but in comedy and in the industry, they've been around for a long time. But you know,
totally
constantly grinding and doing it. And then suddenly they, you know, get a whatever breakout role in something or a comedy special or whatever it is. And suddenly they're everywhere.
And it's to me, it's more pure that way. Think about this. I was thinking about this the other day. I was like getting myself annoyed. You could have a musician that has one hit, 3 minutes of material that maybe they didn't even write.
Mm-hmm.
One hit, and that will make them famous.
Yep.
And people will come out to hear that hit. You know what I mean? They already know the material, and they're like, just play the hit, man. And they can. Yep. Like, if you got three hits, you're like, you could be set for years.
Mm-hmm.
Where
oh, yeah.
Comedy,
yeah.
I listen to a lot of comedians, like, you know, the, like comedians that I really admire, the ones that I look up to, you know, they've had the big specials and everything. They say they're like, you know, when I put out a special, I retire all that material, you know, like mm-hmm. it's because you want to have the element of surprise. So you put out an hour, a full hour, and then it's like, hey, that was great. What else you got?
Yeah. Well, and that's how, I don't know, how do you feel about, because we didn't put out hours, but we did just do, you know, we did our dry bar comedy specials and those are going to be out there. Are you going to retire that 25 minutes of material? Because I'm thinking about it. Like, that's something I think I'm going to record an album and then I plan that will include a lot of the material I did at the dry bar. And then I'm thinking about retiring that material.
So here's my plan. I've been thinking about it.
Well, good. I'm glad to see that. I'm glad that I'm not the only one thinking about this.
I'm not going to fully retire it.
Okay.
But if I'm opening, I'll still use it because people aren't coming out for me. They're coming out for the headliner. You know what I'm saying?
That's true. No, so absolutely. That's a valid point.
If I'm headlining, I won't use that, or I'll use some of it where there's a second part, because in the dry bar, of course, it's clean comedy and you want to be, you know, you want to keep it together. A few of those bits have a second half to them that's a little bit too edgy for that platform. Which
yeah,
is,
absolutely.
Totally fine. I mean, it was a huge opportunity. Yeah. We both took it, and I'm extremely grateful. But there are a few of those bits that have more to it that I just didn't go further, you know, out of respect for what that platform is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So
no, absolutely.
If I'm headlining a few of them, we'll still make it in. If I'm opening, you know, hosting, whatever, I'll still visit that well. So that's the point.
Yeah. And that's a good point. I guess I didn't really think too much about that. But it is, that's a good valid point, because you're right. If you're just featuring or emceeing, the people 10-1, the people in the audience didn't come to see you. They came for the
exactly.
Headliner. So that's a very good, that's valid.
Cause think about this. So so Dan has a headlining show. People are going to see the advertising. They're going to be like, oh, I wonder if this Dan fellow's funny. First thing they're going to do is go to YouTube. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's see what Dan's got.
Absolutely.
They're going to find that. And so to a good extent, a good portion of that has to be set aside for the headlining set they'll come out for. But,
No, absolutely.
So not a permanent retirement of the material, but I'm going to be more strategic and selective when I use it.
Yeah, no, and that's a good plan. That's a good strategy. Like I said, I'm not going to retire mine yet. I want to do an album before I retire all of it. But a lot of my material, too, that I want to get in an album are, you know, is because I've been doing it for a while, and it's I really should, you know, get it documented and then work on some fresh stuff.
Yeah, well, so the thing that I do, and I kind of stress myself out with this because I'm such a lunatic. Like, writing material is such a weird thing, man. Like, it's I had this like layover where I was in the airport. I was waiting in the airport for like 9 hours. I had nowhere else to be, so I was like, I'll just chill here. 9 hours, man. Mm-hmm. And I sat there and I was like, I should write some material. I got all this time. Let's write some material. No bullshit, dude. From all of that time, just staring out the window, I think I walked out of that with 45 seconds of material. And it works. It works every time. But it's such a weird process because it's like when I get a bit that really lands, I'm like, where the hell did that even come from? How am I even going to get that tomorrow? You know, and it like the whole thing stresses me out. I get real freaking crazy about, you know, what if I can't come up with any new jokes anymore? So I'll try and do.
That resonates with me.
Dude, I had a couple of like a good maybe a year ago where I full blown freaked out. I'm like, where does this shit even come from? Am I even in control? Why is anybody putting my stage? And I just totally like flipped out. I had to like calm down and be like, it's okay. You know, we're gonna figure something out.
One of my biggest fears is that I'm going to bonk my head and get amnesia and forget all my jokes.
Yeah, I get that too. I get afraid I'm going to have a stroke and I won't be able to write anymore. No. So what I'll do is I'll try and come up with 2 new minutes a month that I'm happy with. And even that, I just start losing my shit. But if I think of it that way, like, you know, you get 2 new minutes a month, you know, you're close to a half hour at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically a full headlining set, close to full headlining set after 2 years. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So I like that because if I just go like, I need to come up with 25 new minutes that I just lost, I'm like, shit. But if I'm like, I need to just come up with 2 minutes a month, then I calm down and it's more tangible. You know what I mean?
No, yeah, absolutely. You definitely have to do whatever works for you. I mean, my writing process, I don't have one. I mean, I think of an idea, a premise, and then I, you know, try to workshop it or whatever. But I don't have like a strict writing routine where I sit down and I write, you know, for an hour a day. I don't do it. That's never been my style, and it probably never will.
Me neither.
Just for me. For me, I've been thinking, you know, because I've been thinking about, and I was thinking about this before I even taped the Dry Bar Comedy Special. You know, I think about this all the time. It's like, when you get something as a, when you get something as a comedian, what is next? How are you going to use that next? You know what I mean? Like, a lot of comedians, it seems like they get a thing and they're excited and it happens and they do it and it's like, yeah, and then that's it. They don't use it as a stepping stone. So I'm like, okay, so now I did the Dry Bar, you know, in 6 to 9 months, it's going to come out. You know, if it turns out good, if my clips are funny enough that it gains interest, it may drive traffic to my site. Well, maybe I should have a comedy album because then, you know, potentially they're like, oh, I like this Dry Bar stuff. I'm going to go buy his album now. And so to me, I'm using Dry Bar. Well, I hope to use it as a way to drive traffic to other things that I've done. And that's where I'm like, okay, I want to do an album, get it out there. But then I want to start working on new material and stuff just because then I'll have that full album out there. But
what do you think about this though? Like, so imagine the thing that's cool about the Dry Bar is, you know, it's shorter specials. Mm-hmm. Which I think is really smart on their part, because like we watch a lot of comedy because we're comedians, you know what I mean? So our patience is a little different, but I don't know if a whole lot of people sit down and watch a full hour comedy special in one shot. I think a lot of people will break it up into like, they'll watch 30 minutes, come back and watch the other 30 minutes. Yeah. I would imagine.
I agree with that when it comes to the video, you know, and audio together. Like, yeah, people, mm-hmm. I feel like people are just going to, that's kind of where society and our culture is going, where people don't have the attention spans anymore to like sit through a full stand up hour or whatever. But when it comes to, because a lot of people listen to comedy, you know, and, you know, on like Pandora and Spotify, or, you know, they still listen to comedy albums because they listen to podcasts. And like, so like the audio platform is still something that people are still into. So do you think if somebody decides to listen to a whole album, they're going to listen to the whole, you know, the whole album, or are they going to do just bits and pieces of it?
Well, audio, they might listen to longer, especially if you're driving.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's I'm saying. Like, what I plan to do with the, you know, with an album, you know, I may, if I have the resources, you know, film it too, but I'm going to be doing it with the emphasis of, I'm more concerned with the audio, to release an audio album versus, you know, clips or whatever.
Well, have you thought about this though? Because you can, so the Drive Bar app special will come out, you know, to whatever extent the you get the viewership online, that could serve as basically a kick-ass advertisement for all the shows you do over the course of the next year or two. You know what I mean?
And then absolutely.
And then you use that as a mechanism to get people to your shows, to your headlining shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can potentially, if you start like headlining comedy clubs, do that for like a good year, maybe two, and then release a follow-up special. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I just think, like I said, with me, a lot of my material, I think it would be good to get it documented and retire it, just because, you know, and I'm always trying to, even though like I don't have like necessarily a strict or, you know, writing process, I still think of ideas all the time and work stuff out. And I think it's easy as a comedian to just go with what you know works. And then creatively, you don't try new things. And for me, I'm like, okay, I did this. It was good. I'm going to, you know, I think now my material's been good. I've been using it for a while. I mean, I'm always working on my material too. So it's not like I just, this is the end of the joke. I'm always reworking it and updating them and trying to keep them fresh, if you will.
Yeah.
But I think I've reached a point where it's like, okay, I'm very comfortable doing this particular set, doing these particular jokes, and it's time to just, you know, I want to document them, because then I also have, you know, merch and, you know, other media for people to check out. So there's content out there, you know, for people to consume, hopefully. And then, you know, it forces me to try to be a little more creative and try new things instead of just doing what I know works. Gets me out of the comfort zone.
It's good to get out of the comfort zone, man. Like when we go down on Wednesday, it's so often we want to just go up and just hit them with the classics, and we'll like, we won't let each other, you know, we'll be like, nah, dude, I'm trying new shit. You got to try new shit. And if we bomb, we'll bomb together, man. It's good to not let yourself go to that place of comfort and always push a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now,
but, no, man.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say what I really want to do, man, is I want to make the next year, you know, whatever that's gonna look like, as a kind of a transitionary period where I'm regularly working weekends at comedy clubs outside of Utah. Like, I'm traveling for like a gig, you know what I mean? And ultimately, dude, I don't know. Maybe people have mixed feelings about this. I've talked to a couple people about an agent versus manager. They explained the difference to me. I can't remember what it was. One of them, they said, doesn't do as much as the other, but one of those two, if they have connections with clubs and different things, they can kind of help get a schedule lined up for you that, mm-hmm. They're like, hey, we've got some dates for you. And that would just be fucking awesome, man. Like that.
I
would love
having that. Representation would definitely help a career. That's for sure. Yeah. I mean, cause the people that do have representation, it just shows they work more. They work steady. Yeah. But I think that's one thing, hopefully, like I said, we're in a weird world right now, and you of all people know, because you got into a bunch of comedy festivals that all kind of came to shambles, but when they come back, being able to get in, you're going to make a lot of good connections, hopefully. So, looking for representation is definitely something that I feel like is obtainable.
Yeah, I hope. I really hope so, man. I did really recognize the value from Snow Jam, dude. Like just the relationships you start to develop. I can tell you right now that with multiple comics that were there for Snow Jam, if I was in California, I'd hit them up, say, "Hey, man, I'm in town." Some of them I've observed, they seem to have things starting to kind of, mm-hmm. Catch on for them as well. But a lot of them were just cool as shit, man. So I think there is a lot of value in that. You know what I mean? Building those connections and leveraging those. And I'm hoping once I get new dates, I've got new dates for a few of them. The other ones are still kind of, mm-hmm. up in the air. But I'm hoping once I get new dates for all those, that's the plan. Try and use those to build those connections and potentially get some level of representation, because that mm-hmm. would just be
so killer. Right? It would.
I have huge respect for these people that completely built themselves up online. I respect that too, man. I've known a couple people that just built these massive online audiences. It's like, mm-hmm. holy shit, man. I mean, that was just completely on their own. And so
that's another thing I think about with the Dry Bar is how I can use that to help build an online presence. It's funny because, like I said, a lot of comedians, they do a thing and then that's it. They don't think about how that can help them in the future. And for me, I'm so into it and like my head in it that I'm already thinking about what I can do with this. And I just filmed mm-hmm. it. You know what I mean? It's in post-production and who knows when it'll be released. And I'm already how do I use this to help build an online presence? How do I get it to drive traffic to other platforms, other forms of media that I have out there, other content, things like that. Because it's very important to think about those things.
Oh yeah, dude. And the thing too, what's going to be, what I'm excited is they put together a pretty killer looking product, man. I mean, they pull out all the stops. It's professionally shot. The mm-hmm. setting looks great. The whole, feel like, we've seen Dry Bar specials. I've known a few people who have shot those, and I've checked out theirs and they just look awesome.
No, yeah.
So I'm excited. I'm excited for that professional product,
That's one of the biggest benefits of this, of being able to do Dry Bar, is having decent clips to send mm-hmm. for festivals, to bookers and things like that. Because when somebody says, "Hey, oh yeah, I'm interested in booking you, send me a clip," you send them a Dry Bar clip. Well, one, most people in comedy are very aware of Dry Bar and its reputation. So that's says good things about you right away. And then you got the quality. It's got good sound. It's got good, you know, video and editing, and it's a good product. So it's a good way to, you know, represent you.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I do just have to mention, if people aren't aware who follow your podcast. So obviously I met you at Snow Jam, you guys being the festival runners for that. So that's how I met mm-hmm. you. And then I came to find that, you know, you were doing a Dry Bar special. I was like, oh shit, Dan's coming to town. That's yep. badass. So I was like, dude, come early, come to our open mic. You're going to love it here. And I was excited to show you our whole comedy scene. Which
by the way,
so fun.
Salt Lake
here, by the
City
way.
Is a gem of a comedy scene. It's a hidden secret. Like,
yeah.
Wow. Everybody that I met at least that I interacted with was super nice and super kind and very welcoming. And that's something I really appreciate, because a lot of times comics are very standoffish when you go places. Yeah. It's just, you know, I'm not criticizing anybody. It's just the way it is. But not in Salt Lake City. Everybody that I interacted with was very kind and very welcoming. So I really appreciated that.
Yeah, that thing, I was so excited when you were coming. I was like, dude, this is going to be awesome. And so I talked you into coming a day early to hit up the open mic. And then you stuck around for an extra day to go hang out at the club, which was a blast. But yeah, I just knew you were coming to town. And I was like, this is killer. Dan's coming to town. We'll get together. It's going to be fun. And then there was three specials being shot for the show that you were on, right?
Yep. The Friday night. Because for people that don't, you know, that don't understand the process of it, how Dry Bar does it is they do shows on Friday and they do shows on Saturday. But they do three comics on Friday doing two shows, and then three different comics on Saturday doing two shows. So they essentially shoot six comedy specials in a weekend.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the guy that was going to be on there with you and remind me, I can't remember.
Chris
is an awesome guy. So the guy that's supposed to be on there with you guys, I guess he got sick and dropped out. So the owner of Wise Guys, who's also now the president of Dry Bar, he books Dry Bar. He sent me a text message.
Well, yeah, he booked Dry Bar before that, though.
Exactly, yeah. And he's kind of his role has been even more expanded recently, it sounds like. Who you met, by the way.
I did, yeah. He was great. He was really nice.
Awesome.
Very welcoming, yes.
Yeah,
his club
was
awesome.
He sent me a text the night before, and he's like, hey, we had somebody drop out. Do you think you can do it? And I was like, oh, damn, dude. I don't want to burn him, because normally when people think of clean comedy, they don't think about this guy. And so, but I knew I had clean material. So I was like, hold on just a second. I was like, let me just run through this really quick. I ran through it to make sure I had the time. I texted him back. I was like, all right, let's do it. And he was like, cool, man, you're on. And lo and behold, I end up being on my buddy Dan's show. And we shot Dry Bar comedy specials together. Just a crazy.
Out of total random. Wasn't supposed to work
just
that way.
So random, dude. And it just made it so fun. The fact that you're coming to town and that we were both doing Dry Bar specials together. And it was awesome, man. It was such a fun experience. And yeah, dude, I try and be relaxed about the whole thing, because it's like it'll come out when it comes out. Because if I start thinking about it too much, I start getting like excited and like anxious. And I'm like, dude, that's just.
Oh, I do too. Like,
whenever that comes out,
I totally understand. Because it's like one of them things too. You know how, you know, they give you, you know, you get to put a little bit of input on it the night of the show. And I'm like, oh, that's great. But now I'm like, wait a minute. What if I listen to my sets back now? Because, you know, it's hard to really judge yourself like right after. You know what I mean? Like, you actually went back the next day with some stuff that you thought about. And that's what I mean. Like, I haven't listened to my sets. I thought about listening to them again. And then, like, but what if I listen to these? And then I'm like, oh, my God, they got to do all this stuff. And then I have to be that guy that's, like, reaching out and like, well, I think blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to like, forget.
No, dude. So
what Dan is referring to here for those watching is, here's the thing with comedy. Like I really believe every word matters with stand up, like with your setups and everything. And like sometimes mm-hmm. there's a flow to the way it comes out. And it's funny, 'cause on the first show, the impact I felt was like heavier on the punchline, but on the second show I set up the bit better, and there was just this one segment of wording that like I kind of tripped over my own shoelaces on it, and it just bugged me so bad. I was like, I knew they were shooting Saturday, and they give you a sheet when they're like, hey, just write down just like mm-hmm. anything just to stand out for editing or whatever. And I was like, oh, I bet you they still have that sheet, they haven't like gone and you know sent it off to the whoever the editor is or whatever. So we jet back out there, and I just made a quick edit because I knew it would have driven me nuts, dude. But I tried to just put it down there and then not think about it anymore. Because anytime I start thinking about it, I'm like, I just – that neurotic me just starts to come out, and I'm like, whoa, yeah. buddy.
Well, and that's how –
scale
like,
that back.
For me, you know, like I definitely had a better response on the first show from the audience, but like – there was a couple times where I tripped over words, and then the second show, I felt like I technically was there. I didn't trip up over words. I, you know, did what I was supposed to, and the audience just was not having me. So I'm like,
that second
if they
show
can
was
just
weird.
Take the you know most of the second show and put it with the tracks from the audience of the first show. Fantastic. Yeah. The magic of editing.
But I'll tell
and
you,
then,
man. Like,
then suddenly we're getting trouble for talking about all this behind the scenes dry bar stuff. Who knows? And then they're like, well, we're going to not do your specials.
at the end of the day, but we both said, we're like, you know, hey, just take whatever. I mean, you know, here's kind of my thoughts of the set. You know, whatever you feel like stood out more. You know, feel free. I'll defer to the person who's going to be editing and let them do whatever they need.
Right, because that's really, how I felt too.
Yeah, yeah. Like I only had that one little wording where I was like, you know, if there's any way to just, I mean, it's probably 6 seconds of speaking is just this one little part. But I'm such a lunatic. I was like, oh, you know, I'll make a note of that. But yeah, man.
Well, for me, like even filling out the form was a little weird. Because to me, I'm just like, you know what? I did my thing. You guys do yours, and you're very successful at what you do. You are going to probably just do fine with choosing what you want out of this. You know what I mean? It's like as the editors and producers of this thing, it's like, you know what you're doing. You've done this. Your track record is proven. So my input really is you do what you think is best.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing, man. Like I felt like at the end of it, like I knew I got the reactions that I was hoping to get, you know, and you know, it's like we said at the beginning, you got reduced capacity and distancing and everything. So it makes it a, you know, it could be a little more of a challenge, but like, I felt like that first crowd, they were ready to rock, man.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They were a fired up bunch. And, after that one, I was like, nice, dude, that I was just in such a good mood afterwards, man. It was, I tried to just think about that and not let myself, you know, hyper-analyze every little thing I did.
You know,
because I'm that way.
So am I. And I try to do the same thing. I was like, as soon as it's funny too, because after that first show, I was happy about it because I had, like I said, the crowd responded well to me, but I was like, oh man, I just don't feel like that was very good. I did this, I did that. Like I was very hypocritical of myself. Then I did the second show where I felt like my performance was good and the crowd wasn't into me. And then after that, I was like, you know what? We did it. Just be happy. Stop being hypocritical over yourself.
Yeah. You know what I did on the, like, on the second show, like, as far as setting it up and everything, like, I think I, like, I didn't stumble on any words on the second one, but you know what I did do that, I have to consciously not do this, because if I just start going, I'll do it. I'll start talking fast. You know what I mean? And on the first show, my pace was a lot better, you know?
And the reactions were better on the first show.
Well,
but I think that helps too, you know? I mean, honestly, mm-hmm. I did pretty much the exact same sets on both shows. The second show, I added a tag or two that I missed in the first show. And I still did a shorter amount of time because I didn't have the same laugh breaks as I did in the first show. Like that, it's amazing how you don't think about how that affects the timing of your set. You know, like in the second show, I had a couple jokes that fell absolutely flat. Like I got nothing. And I remember being on stage thinking, oh, shit. You know, they don't like me. And then I looked at the clock and I'm like, I'm not going to make my time on this show.
Yeah, it's, that second one felt different. It felt different. And there was the thing with,
The masks and everything make it all weird.
Yeah,
it is. But like I said, at the end of the day, it is what it is. I'm happy I had the experience, and I'm sure the special is going to be just fine. And that's how I left thinking that. I'm like, you know what? They know what they're doing. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
I don't beat yourself up. Because often I get hypercritical and I'm like, well, maybe I shouldn't be here and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, I deserve to be here. I worked my ass off. I got it. I did it. It's done. And they're going to, with what they got between the two shows, that's why you do two shows. They're going to be able to make a good special and it's going to be just great. And they're going to put it out and people on the internet will make fun of me. It's all good.
No, I will say I was so extremely grateful after, doing both shows and just like driving home the whole time. I was just thinking to myself, like, God damn, dude. We just did that shit. Like it was one of the best feelings that, you know, with comedy, I put like, you know, there's certain things that I rank, but, that one was just crazy. That was just crazy. Mm-hmm. Cause it's like,
and it was last minute for you. That's one thing I'm super jealous about that in your situation. Like Grant, I had lots of time to prepare, which means, there's pros and cons. It means, you have time to prepare, but it also means you have lots of time to overthink. And that's my problem. I'm an overthinker and I've been overthinking the shit out of this. I've been working on what I was going to do for Dry Bar. I started working on it, you know, as soon as I found out that they rebooked it or whatever, I booked some shows. And I was, the first time I did what I was potentially going to do for Dry Bar, it was like 35 minutes. It's like, oh shit, I got to cut like 10 minutes. Did it again.
Yeah.
It still wasn't, you know, long enough. Did some more edits. Then it's like, oh shit, now I don't know if I have enough time. And like all this thinking went into this. And you were just, oh, hey, tomorrow you want to do a Dry Bar? And you're like, well, I think I can do clean. And then you had to do whatever you had to do. And it was great. You know what I mean? Like you didn't have to worry about overthinking. You just went and did your thing and it was fantastic.
Well, that's the thing. That's why it was like kind of so surreal. Like it was like, cause on Wednesday, that wasn't even on my radar. Then Thursday, boom, Friday, I'm driving out. I'm like, I'm running through it as I'm driving. And then all of a sudden Friday night, I'm driving home. I'm like, holy shit. I just shot a Dry Bar special. It was just crazy, man.
And I'm your lucky charm. That's what
yes, indeed.
Dan comes to town and Pete gets a Dry Bar comedy special. That's what happened.
Yeah, dude. No, but it was a killer experience, man. And that's the thing. That's the thing. As shitty as like, you know, everything's been with COVID and everything, like I have to like pump the brakes because I'm like, dude, you're just being a complainer, man. Like I'll start being like, it sucks and all this shit. Dude, I've been doing comedy since May.
You know what I mean? Like I've been able to still get up and, you know, I've been able to do weekend shows and like I was able to do a dry bar special. It's like, you know, given all of this shit, that's not terrible.
No, not at all. So yeah, not at all.
And I do have some new dates on that stuff for 2021. So it's like, I mean, that's better than canceled, but you know, I'll take postponed over canceled any day.
Exactly.
So it's like, it's very easy to get caught up with like, this sucks, man. But it's like, I do have to be like, okay, buddy, calm down. We're fine. You know what I mean? Given the circumstances, comedy has actually been pretty decent, even with the challenges, man.
Absolutely. And it does make you better. That's how I felt about it too.
Yeah.
You know,
performing
in a
smaller crowd, it makes you fine tune that.
Absolutely.
That craft, dude.
And I will say with the dry bar, even though it was a smaller crowd in house, they were streaming it, and who knows how many people were watching the stream. You know,
yeah, it's that you start thinking about that. It's like
thinking about that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man. You know, who knows how many people. And maybe on the second show when I didn't think I was doing well with my live audience, the virtual audience could have been loving me, you know, because I wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
Now, the bombing of bombing, the dreadful feeling you get after you bomb, how does that affect you in the sense that how long does that typically last for you now? And how has that changed over the years since you started? I mean, obviously, the story you shared, it took you 6 months to get back on stage. So obviously that feeling lasted a while for you.
Yeah, man, it you know what it is, dude, if it's an open mic, I tend not to get as bothered, even though I still get kind of bugged.
Mm-hmm.
if it's a weekend then I get like if I have a rough set, you know, because like the Ogden Wise Guys, it takes me an hour to get there from here. I'll think about it the whole drive home. I'm like, God damn it. I mean, I normally have a blast up at Ogden. I always, you know, enjoy performing up there. But like I had one show during the pandemic where the Friday show was just, it was such a slow start. Like the host was struggling. There was two openers and we both were like, we just could not get that damn plane off the runway. You know what I mean? And it was like, mm-hmm. What is going on? And, dude, it stayed with me the whole drive home. And I kind of had it like a little bit of a chip on my shoulder the next day. And I was like, dude, we're going to forget this bullshit. We're going to get at it tonight. And then the Saturday was like awesome. And I will tell you, for anybody who, you know, thinks about doing comedy or, you know, how all this stuff impacts us, usually there's one show that stands out more than the other. If you're up Friday and Saturday, rarely they're dead even. There's usually one that's a little bit better, and it's always better if that's the Saturday show. You know what I mean? Because then you leave on that high note. You just did the whole drive home. You got your head in the clouds.
Yeah.
So if the Saturday show is a little sluggish, then you start overthinking it. You know what I mean? It goes back to that neurotic. You're like, was that Friday a fluke? But yeah, man, for the most part, it doesn't stay with me too long. If anything, it'll like, you know, it'll kind of drift in and out of my mind for mm-hmm. the evening. It'll be there the next day. It'll kind of, you know, drift in and out, and then it's like whatever. But I will say, man, at Snow Jam, my first set, I was pissed. I was like, what the hell was that? Because I'm used to kind of what the normal range is here. Like, here's a good set. Here's, you know, kind of the floor of what this set normally gets. And so, and I was below that and I was like, what the hell just happened? Cause you know, you fly out and it's the whole deal. And so I was really looking forward to the next day getting up and getting back on there. But if it's an open mic, dude, I tend to not let it mess with the too much.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Because that's the key. That's the key. You got to just accept bombing is a part of the deal. And if you don't wholesale accept that, this is not, you know, this is not the new hobby for you. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. Well, and that's too with, you know, open mics, you know, you know, when I first started, for me anyway, you know, I would take any bomb really hard. And it's like, oh, maybe I suck at this and blah, blah, whatever. You go through all those internalized thoughts or whatever. But like now I look at it differently. I'm like, okay, I don't care if I bomb at an open mic. To me, it's not a bomb because I have a goal. I'm going to this to, you know, either rework a bit or work on a new joke or try, you know, a different order or whatever it may be. I'm going with a goal to an open mic. I'm not just going to go and go to perform. I have a goal. So if I achieve that. If I achieve that goal, whatever it is for that night, then to me, I'm not bombing. I'm doing what I need to do to improve my set. So when I do get booked for money, I have a good set, you know. And those are the sets that hit me the hardest is when I have to go, you know, if I do poorly and then have to go ask for money. it's always an awkward thing. Yeah. How do you analyze your sets after you bomb? Or even when you do good?
The first set that I did when I came back from the shutdown lifted here, I wrote, it was all new material. The first 30 seconds, 40 seconds worked and the rest of it just ate shit. I mean, it was only a 2.5 minute set, but here's the thing, man. As I drove away, I was like, but that first 30 seconds worked and it works every time. Like, and so now even if I have a set where it's like half of it tanked, if the other half didn't, it's like, well, sweet. That's another page in that book. You know what I mean? That like, that's how you gotta look at it. Like, who gives a shit if half of it doesn't work, or even if 3/4 of it doesn't work, if you have something that you can walk away from being like, that worked. And I think that one bit about whatever, I think that'll work every time. That's a win, dude. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, absolutely.
And if I have a set that just goes a little sluggish, I'll more look at it and be like, okay, how is my demeanor? What kind of crowd did I have? What adjustments should I have made? You know, because like, I do feel like I can kind of look out and read an audience a little bit. And know, like if you get a younger crowd, like this kind of shit's going to land more. If you get an older crowd, it might lose them and they don't know what the hell you're talking about. I've gotten better at making those adjustments. And so sometimes I'll look out and be like, I should have known, man. What was I doing? You know, it's more like, how are we going to correct and make sure that the next one hits home, you know, as opposed to just I effed up, you know, like what the hell. So it's more just I definitely get, if ever I have a sluggish set, I'm hungry to get up again, because I want to quickly correct that,
right? I think we all do. The worst is when you have a sluggish set and you're in a hurry to get up, and you get up again, and then you have another sluggish set. Then you're like, oh no, it's a downward spiral.
Here's what will happen to me sometimes.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, though, sometimes that what will happen, that thing that I'll have to like, I'll have to calm down with, is sometimes with writing, I'll go on a hot streak where like everything I write, it's like, I'm like, damn, dude, it's all landing. And like, you'll get a little bit overly confident, but then you'll have the opposite. You'll have a streak where you'll have just everything you write in a row just eats it. And it's like that, I feel like you have to just calm down and be like, it's okay. You know what I mean? Like sometimes you get the feast and famine with material. Sometimes you're hot, and sometimes it's like you won't have anything that really you like in a month.
Yeah, well, it's all part of the process, because that's comedy is a process. All right. Oh, yeah. Well, now we talked about all that. We're going to do some of the fun stuff that I like to do. Do you have a pre-show ritual or tradition?
I mean, the thing I always do is I grab one of those small little 8-ounce Red Bulls, you know, and as I'm driving out, like I like to listen to a podcast of just people that I think are funny.
to kind of get me into the right mindset. And then when I'm standing in the back of the room, when they're getting to call me up, sometimes I'll kind of just do like a little, like a, I'll kind of like shake my arms just a little bit to like, kind of like get loose. Cause you want to be loose, man. You don't want, like, you don't want to be fired up. You're fired up. Your energy's all too, it's too much. You want to just be that, that calm killer. You know what I mean? Like, so that I'll try and just get as loose and as calm as I can. I feel when I'm the, most relaxed is when I do the best.
Cool. What about your, what's been your best or favorite gig so far? I mean, obviously you just did Drybar, so that might be the answer. We've spent a majority of this podcast talking about that, but maybe it's something else, but so we'll.
Dude, I had this one that, I mean, there's been a few, but I had this one where it was at the Downtown Club on a weekend. And, of course, man, like I had my buddy JD, you met JD. He came out to film. He's got a pretty nice camera. And the first show was fine. You know, well, the Friday night show was fine. The late show, it was better, you know, but it still just wasn't the full potential that I know it could have been. And then this, the next night, the Saturday, which of course he doesn't come out to and it's not being filmed, but it just, it just every little aspect, every little nuance was right on target and everything was landing exactly how I wanted to. It's like you just get off stage just buzzing, dude. It was one of my best feelings performing on stage. And of course it was the night that I wasn't filming.
That's always how it goes. I could go on and on about that. And a lot of my comedy buddies know this about me, that I am notorious for having better sets when I'm not filming. Like I have all these issues where like I'll bring a camera and then, you know, I'll forget to hit record and I'll have a really good set, or something malfunctions or something goes wrong with the camera and I can't record the set or whatever. And then I have a good set. Mm-hmm. Then when I get it to work or whatever, my set's like mediocre. So I can definitely feel your pain on that for sure. The last thing I like to do is called a game called Pick a Number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20, and then I'm going to ask you a corresponding question that may or may not be comedy related.
All right. Let's go 19.
19. Oh, man. Ooh, I like this question. It may have only came up one other time, you know, so there's some numbers that get picked a lot. It's amazing. I'll have to go one of these days. I might have to go back and actually see which ones have been picked the most, but this one has not been picked a lot. And the question is, who would win in a fight between Spider-Man and Batman?
Dude,
I know.
Here's the thing, man. Like, and people will hate on me for saying this.
Tread lightly.
There's two superheroes that I just haven't got, like, I can never get fully on board with. And the polar opposites, Spider-Man and Batman. Spider-Man, because he's damn near invincible. I know, like, with Kryptonite, you know, that's his vulnerability. But, like, outside of that,
that's
like,
Superman.
That's Superman, where Batman is totally on the other end of it, where like it always bugged me that he didn't have the superpowers, dude. And people are like the real diehards are like, no, man, you don't get it. His intelligence is the superpower. It's like, dude, I need a superpower. I would have to go Spider-Man. I need some kind of special ability beyond stupid rich.
So do you think, that's what you would choose if you were the superhero. But the question is, who do you think would win in a fight? Do you think Spider-Man, the having special powers, would trump Batman having superior intelligence, also probably more experience fighting, cool tools, you know, weapons and stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of factors. You got to go. Oh,
Spidey sense.
All right. Spidey sense. All right.
That's what sets it apart, man.
There you have it.
That Spidey sense.
Spidey sense for the win. All right. Last thing, finally, where can people find you on social media and web?
Pete Jr. Comedian, Pete Jr. Comedy. That's with the JR. My website's PeteJrComedy.com. And yeah, man. And I'm headlining Wise Guys this Friday. So yeah,
well, this won't come out before that this Friday. So this will be a couple weeks before this comes out. Nice. Are you actually a junior?
Pete Jr. Comedy. I am. Are you? Yeah, my family calls me PJ.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I only ask because I'm a junior as well. That's another thing we share in common. I'm a junior as well. Yes. I go by Dan Bublitz Jr. Most of the time. Yeah. All right. Well, this has been fun, Pete. Thank you so much for joining me. It was great getting to shoot our specials together. And thanks for doing this.
Yeah, buddy. Absolutely, man. Good talking to you, man. Come back out to Utah soon.
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.